Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Vampire Historian Podcast. This is your host, Dax Stokes. And first, I wanted to apologize. It's middle of October. I was hoping to get some episodes out earlier this month, but I had to do some traveling and was at a conference for a little while and just wasn't able to get everything recorded in time that I wanted to do. So this is the first episode for October. There will still be some more, so I'm still going to try to get some episodes done. Some exciting things, hopefully, for the rest of the month and a little bit into November as well. Today is October 17th, which is Salem's Lot Day. And so what I've done here today is done a little special episode and called one of our older guests, Jess Peacock, who we did an interview with last October, who's an author and a scholar and a Salem's Lot specialist. And just did a little interview about Salem's Lot and why it's important and some of the things he's got coming up, including a future podcast about the book. So I hope you enjoy this little episode specifically about Salem's Lot, the Stephen King novel, with our good friend Jess Peacock. Thanks.
All right, well, I'm here with Jess Peacock, who many of you might remember from an episode actually this month last year. So it's been almost 1 year since we talked last, and wanted to have him on today because today is a special day, especially with Jess's research, which is Salem's Lot Day. So welcome to the show again.
Thank you for having me.
Great. So you want to tell everybody what makes today significant in the history of Salem's Lot?
Yes, absolutely. 42 years ago, today was the day that Doubleday Books published Stephen King's second book, which was Salem's Lot. So it's a special occasion. It's it falls in October, so it makes October even more special and one of the most wonderful times of the year.
Mm-hmm. And we talked a little bit last year when we did the longer episode, but you want to talk a little bit about why this book is special to you, or why you think it's one of the better vampire books?
I mean, there's many reasons, but just here very quickly. Aside from all of the symbolic and metaphorical and political and sociological and theological elements that I think that you can pull from the book, it's just to this day still one of the scariest books I have ever read, and for that reason alone, it's worthy of being honored and remembered and perpetuated in the popular culture. It's just scary. I read the book at least once a year, and there are scenes in the book as many times as I've read them that still just give me chills, and that creeping feeling down your spine. I still get it, reading the book. So just on that level, that's why it's so special to me and so important to me. But beyond that, like I said, there's a lot of political and metaphorical and symbolic strands that run through this book and the universe of Salem's Lot. I was just reading an article online earlier today. Someone was sort of encompassing Stephen King's cosmological mythos and comparing it in a lot of ways to Lovecraft. And King has even borrowed from Lovecraft. Mm-hmm. They made a statement in the article saying that, the novel It is sort of the linchpin mm-hmm. of all this. And I understood what they were saying because it introduces Pennywise and, the cosmic turtle, Madawan, I think his name is, and all that. But going back to Salem's Lot and its surrounding stories, like the prequel Jerusalem's Lot, King, that's where he begins establishing sort of like this cosmic force of the white and the black, the good and the evil. Toward the end of Salem's Lot, King talks about the power of good connected to like the scene where Ben Mears has the holy water on his hands and he's chopping down Barlow's door with the axe, and he goes into great detail talking about this power is not this power is not religious. This power is not Christian. This power is cosmic. And that begins to sort of establish this cosmic mythos that King created. And then in the prequel, Jerusalem's Lot, he writes very much in the vein of H.P. Lovecraft and even connects that mythos, which is the Salem's Lot mythos, to the Lovecraftian mythos of the Elder Gods and everything associated with that. So that's all to say that all of this stuff that people are excited about King again and this universe that he created that sort of came to fruition with the Dark Tower series, that started in Salem's Lot. So Salem's Lot is actually the keystone of this entire Stephen King universe. And that's another important reason I think that we really need to focus on the book itself. Because King is becoming very important. Well, has always been important to the popular culture, but it seems like within the last 5 years, we sort of have this renaissance of King going on. So, and that's exciting for me because now they're talking about potentially because of how well it went. They're talking about a Salem's Lot feature remake. And so all this stuff just seems to be coming together, and it's very exciting for me.
Yeah, we're kind of finally getting away from the 90s TV movies of Stephen King works to some bigger, higher budget, you know, films, which I think is really bringing everything kind of out there. I haven't seen the new It yet, so I haven't reserved my judgment. I'm partial to the old one in a way, so I haven't decided yet whether I'm going to like this new one or not. I'm kind of going in with a bias, I guess, but as we often do with things from our childhood, you know.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. What I like that they did with the film was they didn't rush it. You know, they basically chopped the book into two halves,
right?
And they filmed the in the book it's, you know, the late, was it 1957? I think it's the kid stuff is set in, but in the movie they set it in the 80s. So when they do the adult version, you know, the adult half, it'll be set in, you know, contemporary times, which is really smart. But also, I just like the fact that they didn't try to tackle the whole book. And, you know, that's a lot of the times with King, you know, you're talking about, like, you know, the old adaptations. You know, King is very dense, a very dense writer. And so it's very difficult to adapt in a short amount of time, you know, a feature length time. So by cutting that in half and letting it breathe and telling the first story, before you get to, you know, the second half, I thought it was genius. And it allowed them to really, I think, capture the essence of you know, the terror of Pennywise, the sort of the, for lack of a better description, the spiritual oppression that Pennywise brings to Derry. And they can really let that simmer. And now with the sequel already scheduled, I think they'll be able to bring it home in a powerful way.
Yeah, if you think about the other thousand-page novels, you know, like The Stand, I mean, the TV version of that was 8 hours long. And Under the Dome, you know, was an entire series, you know, two seasons at least. So, you know, it does take a lot to put it into a, you know, 3 or 4 hours is probably pretty difficult. I think we talked a bit last time about the Salem's Lot, you know, the TV films. And I think most people are partial to the original. You know, version from the 70s, which is definitely scarier, you know, than the Rob Lowe version. But you want to talk a little bit about the differences between those again, you know, maybe what the original gets right, maybe what the other one maybe get right a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, just briefly, in my opinion and in my observation, with the original Salem's Lot, despite, you know, some radical changes, in particular the nature of Barlow, you know, they switch Barlow from sort of this very Dracula-like nobleman to a Nosferatu, you know, creature, and they sort of attribute Barlow's aesthetic from the book to Straker in the miniseries, which, interestingly, that's a massive change, but the interesting thing is that the tone of the book seems very much intact in the original miniseries. That sort of Peyton Place with vampires is often how it's described. And they really sort of kept that despite some of the changes. And interestingly, with the remake with Rob Lowe, they kept more of the story. They kept more from the book. I mean, Barlow is that sort of old world, old country nobleman.
Right.
You know, the characters are there. But the thing that they did was they erased the atmosphere, and more importantly, they did away with all of the caricatures that made the characters in the book so endearing. You know,
mm-hmm.
Ben Mears goes from, you know, basically a nice guy with a bit of a troubled past to this really cynical sort of douchebag writer who just sort of preys upon the misfortune of others. Mark Petrie
right.
goes from, you know, this sort of nerdy, I think King even sort of describes him almost as effeminate in the book, monster lover, nerd, geek kind of kid, the kind of kid that I was, you know, back in the day, to basically a juvenile delinquent. You know,
mm-hmm.
they basically just keep the names and create all these horrible new characters to put in place. And so even though they kept the story beats pretty much on par until you get to the end and turning, you know, Father Callahan into this villain. It's an interesting exercise in extremes of how one project can stick so closely to the book and yet be so far from it, and another project can, you know, make a lot of changes to a book and really, though, hold on to what made the book scary and interesting. So that's how I view those two projects.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully, if they make a feature, we'll get a director that really focuses kind of on the book more, and goes back to that story as opposed to, you know, just some whole new Hollywood thing that just uses the name.
Yeah, and I think one of the keys to an adaptation. Yeah, well, I think one of the keys to an adaptation of Salem's Lot is. I think it really needs to stay in the 70s. Because
mm-hmm.
once you begin introducing technology, cell phones, social media, computers, all these other things, once you begin introducing technology to the story, you begin sort of erasing that wall of seclusion that
right.
small town 1970s, 1980s sort of small town vibe that I actually grew up in. I mean, I grew up in a, it wasn't even a town. It was a village. There weren't enough people to call it a town.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very isolating because you didn't have social media. You didn't have cell phones. You didn't have everything that you have today to reach out to the world and be connected. And
right.
that creates an environment where, well, hell, that, you know, if vampires were real, they could kind of swoop into a small town like this and sort of gradually take over, and who would notice? Because these towns are so isolated. And so I think you really need to keep it in the 1970s in order for it to really be effective.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why in 30 Days of Night, the first thing they do is burn all the cell phones.
Yeah.
You know, to make sure that there's no kind of outside world there. Well, great.
For
so
sure.
Do you want to talk a little bit about what you're working on in regards to Salem's Lot, what things you've got coming up?
Yeah, sure. So this has been something I've just sort of been thinking about for some time. Just with all my research, with all the writing I do on King and Salem's Lot, et cetera, I've been sort of mulling over this idea of doing a podcast. Revolving around Salem's Lot, the novel, the films, the short stories, sort of all the ephemera that surrounds Salem's Lot. And so I just finally decided, you know what, if you don't do it, you're not going to do it. So I sat down, started making plans of how to put all this together, and it's called Legacy of the Marston House, which is the name of my Facebook page as well. The first episode will be launching on Halloween, October 31st. I'm keeping the episodes to, but I'm sort of using lore as a model
mm-hmm.
for how these work. You know, lore is about, you know, 25 minutes long or so. They're well researched. They're well produced, and I'm trying to follow that aesthetic to some extent. So they're not super long. They're going to be about 25, 30 minutes long. You know, maybe a little longer. I'm thinking about maybe doing some commentaries on the movies and whatnot. But I want to keep them short because I want them to be easily digestible for people. They will be fun in the sense that we'll be talking about all of the, you know, the factoids and the interesting tidbits, but at the same time, exploring the research that I'm doing around the book on liberation issues, on oppression issues, bringing the book as a model for the work toward liberation in contemporary times, bringing that forward and discussing that somewhat as well. So kind of like my book, Such a Dark Thing, where what I tried to do was balance the interesting nerdy stuff, the fun stuff with the academic side of things. So it has a nice balance to it. And that's what I'm going to try to do with the podcast.
And is it going to be pretty much just you every episode, or are you going to have guests, or how are you going to format it?
Right.
Pretty much just like
right
lore,
now,
it's just you?
Yeah, well, so far, I've been working on the first episode this week, and this first episode will simply be me. What the future holds, you know, it kind of, you know, there's some factors involved. My ability in the limited time I have with my PhD program and everything else to, you know, potentially track down some interesting interviews for the podcast. I'm not saying it's off limits or that I can't do it, but we'll see. If I have that ability, if I have that time, I would like to do that. But for the most part, yeah, it'll be me. It'll be some fun sound production using clips from the miniseries, from the BBC radio play, the audiobooks, things like that, and sort of integrating all that. So it's not just me yapping for a half hour, but there's some interesting other tidbits that are going on as well.
Well, obviously, Laura is a good one for all of us to try to emulate since he's doing. He's got his books
for
and
sure.
TV shows and tours and everything going, so it's going pretty well for him. Great. Well, why don't you plug your book again? We did a whole episode about it last year, but why don't you talk about your book one more time so people know, you know, if they haven't gotten it already, what to go get.
Yeah. The book is called Such a Dark Thing, Theology of the Vampire Narrative in Popular Culture. Basically, the premise of the book is looking at how within popular culture, the vampire narrative, sort of dating back to, you know, Bram Stoker's Dracula, which is sort of the, you know, that sired much of our contemporary views on vampires in pop culture. Looking at how those narratives address a myriad of things and how often there's a perception that the vampire tale is sort of almost like a Christian allegory. And I sort of break that down and critique it to some extent and then move the critique into looking at how the vampire narrative can be turned into an allegory of the fight against oppression, a metaphor for the fight against oppression, and which is not uncommon in monster theory, that monsters represent one thing and then the other characters in the story represent another. It's not just monsters and victims. So I'm taking that concept from monster theory, applying it to the vampire narrative, and really just sort of trying to run with it, bringing it into contemporary times, talking about Black Lives Matter, talking about, even though it's sort of passé at this point, Occupy Wall Street, the Dapple Water protesters. There's all sorts of movements that we can sort of take these narratives and place them over top as sort of like this blueprint for liberative effort. And so that's sort of the main thrust of the book overall.
Great. And do you have anything besides the podcast?
Go buy it.
Anything else? Yeah. Anything else you got coming out or working on or papers or more books or anything?
Yeah, I just signed the contract for my second book, which is, at this point, it's basically in outline stage. I haven't done too much work on it. The premise of the book is going to be taking a look at stories from the Bible that are, you know, quite horrific. Basically, their own little, you know, horror stories that are, you know, tucked away in the Bible, and sort of comparing them to modern day horror stories and what they may have meant then, and how we can use that that lens to view the modern day version of those same horror stories. You know, for example, one of the things that one of the things that I'm doing is taking the death of the woman at the end of the Book of Judges, the woman who was raped and murdered, and putting that in conversation with Autopsy of Jane Doe, the film, and talking about the, you know, feminist issues, male dominance issues, violence against women, things along those lines, which is, you know, right now very much with the, you know, with the current current leader of our country, violence against women is a very pertinent topic, as it should be, obviously. But right now, it's more so in the news than ever. So, how those differing narratives also can be very similar, and how they can speak to us in contemporary times. So that's the thrust of the new book.
Right. And where can people find, you know, all of your stuff? You mentioned your the page for the podcast, but you want to go ahead and plug all your pages and everything again?
Yeah, on Facebook, it's just Legacy of the Marston House. You can go and like that. I'm on Twitter at Such a Dark Thing, and you can check out my blog, which has varying moments of work on it. Like some months there's a lot of work, some months, you know, there's not so much. But that's suchadarkthing.blogspot.com.
Great. All right. Well, I appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your busy schedule to talk to us a little bit about Salem's Lot. And one more thing. In the way that I collect editions of Dracula, you collect Salem's Lot. How many different copies of Salem's Lot do you own so far?
Let me walk over here and take a look real quick. 37.
37. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, 37. Several of them are really really interesting. Where I have the Japanese two volume cover, and the covers put together create this really cool panorama of a cemetery. Have a very very interesting Chinese copy. The cover is very unique, very artistic. If you picture, you know, what a Japanese painting in like a tea house looks like, it's very similar to that. A few Spanish versions, a couple Russian versions. The great thing about one of my Spanish copies is I don't know how this happened, but the cover is Stephen King, El Misterio de Salem's Lot. But the image on the cover is the face of one of the werewolves in mid-transformation from The Howling.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, I think it's Eddie Quipp. So that's fun. I really enjoy that. And then, of course, my prized one is the one I got when I was 8 years old, the one that my parents bought me. And it's the the total black cover with the embossed girl's face with the single drop of blood. That's my favorite. Yeah, I've had that since I was 8, and that's my baby. That's my thing. I try to collect different covers of Salem's Lot.
Sure. And if people are interested, they can see a picture of them on your Marston House Facebook page today. So.
Yeah, I laid them out.
Everybody should go check it out.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Great. Well, thanks again for being with us, and good luck with all of your upcoming work. And everybody check out the podcast when it comes out on October 31st.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that little interview with Jess Peacock again. Again, you can always find me at thevampirehistorian.com. You can email me at thevampirehistorian@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, the Vamp Historian or Vampire Historian. You can also find us on Patreon if you're interested in helping out that way. And again, stay tuned for more episodes coming up here for the rest of October. And as always, if you have something specific you'd like to hear about within the vampire world, let me know. And we can always do episodes about all different kinds of things and interview different people. So thanks for checking in, and we'll see you next time.